This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 7, Episode 24 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
I'm Megan.
That's Megan from Educating Geeks. How's it going, Megan?
I'm good. I'm really excited to be here. I might have jumped the gun there. I'm excited.
Well, you know, we're excited to have you.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, you know, the three of us have been on one other podcast together,
yes.
And it's gone down,
yes,
in infamy. That was an episode of the 602 Club where we're discussing the Jurassic Park sequels, specifically The Lost World and Jurassic Park 3, where you guys were completely wrong about The Lost World. And
see, that's not quite how
brilliance.
I recall it, Megan. How about you? I recall us being correct.
I recall it that way as well. However, to each their own. I'm not going to judge.
I think
I just totally disagree.
You need to go back and listen, and you'll see. You'll see how wrong you were.
I probably got really fired up about that.
But today we're not going to be talking about Jurassic Park or any of its sequels. Instead, we're going to be talking about a Fast and Furious sequel, Furious 6, which is Justin Lin's seventh movie, his final movie, and this is the final work of a Star Trek creator, which we're going to cover. We've done 115 of these things so far. This is number 116 and number last. So that's exciting. I don't know. To me, anyway. So before we get into that, Megan, okay, now you're one of the hosts of Educating Geeks, right?
Yes.
Okay, so can you explain for people what that is?
So Educating Geeks is a podcast that you guys should all listen to. I think you'd all really like it. The whole concept is that we don't shame people for not having been able to watch or play or read one of our favorite things. So if we find out a friend of ours has never watched Star Trek, we don't revoke their geek card. We invite them over, we sit them down, we watch Star Trek together, and we talk about it afterwards. So we like to bring new people into our favorite fandoms on our show.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it's always exciting.
It is.
I mean, one of the things which I love as a movie fan or whatever is showing people things that they haven't seen before and, you know, trying to blow their mind, you know? I mean, that's pretty great.
Yeah. It's so much fun. Yep. That's what being a geek is all about, is blowing someone's mind with awesome. So we try to put aside the judgment and be friendly and welcoming with our geekdom.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
It is. It's very cool. You guys did something on Dune recently, actually, which was...
We did.
Which was a really good show.
We did like a whole extravaganza on Dune because we covered the book on Educating Geeks, and then we were joined by Norm and Matthew from the 602 Club, and then they invited Alice, my co-host, and I back onto the 602 Club where we talked about the movie. So there's a little bit of a crossover happening with us in the 602 Club on those Dune episodes, and it was a lot of fun. And I had never read the book or seen the movie, so I was the newbie on those, and I'm so glad that I finally had the opportunity to sit down and watch and read, because it's a really great series, and I'm going to be reading and watching more of that. So,
excellent.
So I take it you're a fan of Star Trek. This isn't something where we have to educate you on what Star Trek is, right? Okay. All right.
No, you guys invited me, and with welcome open arms, I was like, it's my people. I'm a big Star Trek fan. I was raised on Star Trek. I'm definitely a Next Gen girl, but I watched Next Generation as it was coming out. I watched Deep Space Nine. I watched Voyager. I didn't watch very much Enterprise, but I'm fixing that now. I love Star Trek. It's the greatest.
What did you think about the new J.J. Abrams movies?
I liked the first one, but I did not like Into Darkness. I was literally cursing under my breath in the theater. And if you listen to some episodes of The Ready Room, Chris and I have gone on little mini rampages about that movie from time to time. So don't get me started on Into Darkness.
Okay, well, I take it you've seen the trailer and stuff for Star Trek Beyond, the new one?
Yeah, I have.
What do you think?
I'm really not thrilled. I'm not super excited at this point. I'm going to try and hold my judgment. I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to go check it out at some point. Probably not right away after it's released, but I'll get into the theater at some point. But, you know, after Into Darkness and based on how the trailers are looking, I'm not that excited.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
All right. No, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine.
The JJ totally verse just doesn't seem to be, you know, my cup of Earl Grey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people feel that way. I mean, for sure. Yeah. But what about the fact that Justin Lin is directing this one? Are you a Justin Lin fan?
I am a Justin Lin fan. I actually am a really big fan of the Fast and Furious movies. I think those are my favorite thing that I've seen Justin Lin do. I've seen some of the episodes of Community that he's done. I think that's pretty much it. I'm sure I've seen those episodes of True Detective that he directed, but in terms of what I've seen of Justin Lin's work, it's primarily his Fast and Furious work. And I love those movies. And I think they're really well done. I don't know if Fast and Furious equals Star Trek for me, right? They're so totally different. And because I'm so trenched in Star Trek The Next Generation, that's a very different style of storytelling than the storytelling that's happening in Fast and Furious, mm-hmm. which I really like in Fast and Furious. I just don't know if it resonates with me as a Star Trek fan.
It's fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll see. It could be good.
Yeah.
You never know.
Just for the record, he did the first two episodes of season two of True Detective. So basically,
yeah, and I haven't watched season two yet, so okay. I haven't seen those.
All right. Well, I mean, check. I would say you've seen season one.
Yeah, I really enjoyed season one.
Yeah, I mean, people are, you know, they compare it to season one, and they're like, this is nowhere near as good. It's terrible. And it's like, well, okay, no, wait. Let's take a step back. True Detective season one is like one of the finest seasons of television in television history, you know? So anything is going to be, you know, bad in comparison to that. But it's still pretty great. And basically, because he directed the first two episodes, he's kind of responsible for the look of that season and everything. And I think he did a really great job, but, you know.
Well, and True Detective is an anthology series, right? So to me, I think it's kind of hard to compare. It's kind of like American Horror Story, right? I mean, those are done by the same showrunners, but every season kind of has its own feeling and its own style. So I kind of feel like it's unfair to compare the two seasons.
Yeah.
I don't know if have they greenlit a third season of that?
I don't think yet.
I don't think they're going to.
I think it's on the bubble. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what they could do with the third season after feedback from season two. I don't know.
Yeah,
True. They're just waiting for me to catch up. I haven't seen first season or second season. They're like, we'll hold off for you, John. Then we'll renew it. Like, thanks, guys.
You haven't seen the first season yet, John?
I have not.
It's so good.
I'm too busy becoming a Fast and Furious fan thanks to this show.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
That is like watching a whole season of TV right there, watching all of these movies.
Yes, a glorious season, a splendiferous season.
Yes, for sure. Well, today we're going to be talking about Justin Lin's final movie as of right now, and his final Fast and Furious movie, and the second to the last Fast and Furious movie as of right now, and that is Furious 6. Okay, let's talk about the title. Right off the bat, I'm always very specific about this one and calling it Furious 6. And I you know, lots of times there's some controversy. Not so much anymore now that there's Furious 7, but at the time, okay, let's go all the way back. And then, okay, so you've got the Fast and the Furious. Then the sequel is Too Fast, Too Furious. Fantastic title, you know. The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. We've already discussed how you can take Tokyo Drift and put that at the end of any movie and instantly make it a movie which you have to see, you know?
Established fact.
Lawrence of Arabia, Tokyo Drift. I mean, who's not going to see that movie? So then, okay, Fast and Furious. Very interesting. Trying to establish that they're getting back to the basics of the first one, you know? cutting out all of the, you know, extra whatever. It's not, there's not even room for the's. It's just Fast and Furious.
Yep.
And then Fast Five, it's like, okay, let's abbreviate things even more. Fast Five. So what do you call the next movie? And as soon as Fast Five came out, and because I've always had this theory, like it started around the time of Fast and Furious, saying that like you could apply the formula for naming movies in, you know, the Fast and the Furious franchise to any other franchise, and it would totally work. So you've got, for example, let's just say Star Trek, two-star, two-trek, Star Trek, Tokyo Drift, the Star Trek. You know, you either add those right. or you take them away. Sure. And then,
Star and Trek.
Yeah, yeah. And then
but it has to be an ampersand. Yeah.
And then you've got Star 5. Okay, so yeah. what's the next logical step? You have Fast Five. What's the next logical step? I always said it's Furious Six.
Furious Six, yep.
It just makes sense. I'm like, this next movie, it has to be called Furious Six. And then the information started coming out, and people were saying, like, Fast Six, you know, okay, that's lame. You're just doing what you did, you know, last time. And then the posters started coming out, and they were all Fast and Furious Six. You know, you look at any poster for this movie, it says Fast and Furious 6. I'm like, that you guys aren't even trying. Like, this is so lame. You guys are the worst. You're ruining this franchise, you know? And I was watching the movie, you know, and I'm sitting in the theater. I'm sitting next to Brandon, my co-host from Commentary Track Stars. So, and he can tell you, this is a true story. And I'm watching the movie. And they have the whole big opening sequence and the all of that amazing credit montage thing. And then the title bursts onto the screen and it says Furious Six. And I literally jumped up and you know, raised my fists over my head and said, yeah, frack yes. You know, this is the... And Brandon's sitting there like, what is wrong with you? What's going on? I'm like, it's Furious Six. They did it. They followed the formula that they established. It's Furious mm-hmm. Six. And that was honestly like the most joyous moment I've experienced in a movie theater in probably the past like 5 years. Okay. Wow. So,
that's pretty intense.
Yeah. So I'm very happy that the name of this movie is Furious Six, even though the box art and everything else says Fast and Furious Six. It's not. It's Furious Six. It's very important.
Well, I mean, it's just like when they retitled Raiders of the Lost Ark for the Blu-rays. It says Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, but when that title card comes up, it's the original. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
I'm very much a stickler for this. It's like whatever's on screen. Like right now, everyone's like Rogue One, a Star Wars story. What's that? I'm like, let's talk after the movie comes out because I'm fairly certain that they're going to come to their senses and just call it Star Wars Rogue One, right? I mean,
I don't know. Well, that's a whole side conversation. I don't think they are.
You think is you think literally the credits are going to roll and it's going to say no. Rogue One, a Star Wars story?
No, I think it's going to say Rogue One. I don't know how the opening will go, but a Star Wars story will never be dropped from anything, but it won't say at any point Star Wars colon Rogue One or Star Wars Rogue One.
No,
because that's going to be reserved for the episodes.
I agree.
So that Star Wars The Force Awakens, Star Wars Episode 8, whatever.
That's all marketing. I mean, like the title of the new movie is Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. That's what's on screen, right? So like I imagine what's going to happen here is, you know, you're going to have the Star Wars burst onto the screen and, you know, fly out into the distance. And then as the crawl starts, assuming there is a crawl, it'll just say Rogue One, right? That's my guess.
Oh, okay. Yes. That
yeah,
I
see that.
I agree with you there. Yes.
Yeah.
So that to me means, yes, Star Wars Rogue One is the you know, they can call it Rogue One, a Star Wars story, but that's a bunch of crap, right? No?
Yeah. Okay. I'm down with you on that one. Yes.
Yeah, I agree there. I do think in terms of all the marketing stuff, though, they're really going to be pushing that a Star Wars story thing because, I mean, that's their whole marketing ploy right there.
Yeah.
It's a weird choice for them to make. You know, they should have just kept the episode. I know they were afraid of scaring people away by saying, like, Episode 7, I haven't seen 1 through 6, you know, but I don't know. To me, I don't know. It's weird. They're weird, but whatever. They're making billions of dollars.
Well,
so.
And anyway, because are you going to call this one like episode 3.8 in case you want to do?
Yeah,
other stuff
I think that gets messy.
No, you just call it. I don't know. Anyway,
okay.
That's neither here nor there. Okay, so Furious Six. They got this one right. They got the title right for this one, and I couldn't be happier about it. This is a movie which came out in 2013. It was, I think, a week after Into Darkness came out, strangely enough. And yeah, John, you want to give a synopsis?
Yes. The crew that we've all come to know and love in one way, shape, or form through the previous five movies. If you were paying attention to the credit cookie in Fast Five, you found out that somebody you thought was dead was in fact alive. And so The Rock needs their help, and it's because Letty is alive again. And
Yay.
It shatters Dom's world, and he's got to go. Even though Brian is saying to him, come on, man, I used to do this when I was a cop. We would dangle this in front of somebody. It's a lie. They're playing you, man. But no, Dom's got to know. Dom's got to know. And the most relaxed love interest in the world says, if the person you were in love with before you knew me is out there, you have to leave me and go find her. Interesting. All right. Yeah, go you. That's great. And so they go off and they essentially find themselves head to head in exchange for pardons and the attempt to find and redeem Letty and bring her back to the family. They have to go up against a thieving gang of people who have skills exactly like theirs in terms of racing, who use them for evil to steal military things. And they're going to steal one last component that will mean the fate of the entire planet is in their hands, up for auction. And so they got to fight them and all of that stuff. And it's hijinks ensue.
Back when the movie came out, there was a review, which I read on Twitter, from a filmmaker named Joseph Kahn. I don't know if you guys are familiar with
yeah.
him.
Okay.
He made a movie called Torque, which came out right around the time that The Fast and Furious came out, which I always thought was the superior film of the racing movie, but whatever, that's just me. And,
I don't know if I've seen that.
The thing that I liked about it is that it's extremely visceral. The plot is like paper thin, but whatever. You've got Ice Cube on a motorcycle, racing people, and it was very entertaining. It's extremely, visually, kind of cool and everything. And yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. He's known, his bread and butter is music videos. He's directed a million videos. Most recently he's done pretty much all of Taylor Swift's music videos and stuff like that, but he's done tons, like going all the way back to the 90s. Anyway, he tweeted his review of Furious Six, and he actually calls it Furious Six in his post, which I think is pretty spot on. It's not really a review so much as a synopsis. Here it is. I found it. Family. Sad face. Family. Car flip. Family.
Yep.
It's pretty accurate.
You forgot Airplane in there, buddy.
Oh.
Yes, with the 36 mile long runway.
You forgot Airplane.
Well, he only had 140 characters, so.
True.
That's true. True. That's true. And the airplane is definitely important, and we'll get to that later on.
Yeah. But,
So, Megan, what did you think about Furious 6?
I really love it. It's so cheesy. The action is amazing. I love that they are bringing Letty back in this movie, because I always thought it was a mistake to kill her character off. Because Michelle Rodriguez is just, she's such a tough chick, and she was so integral. She felt so integral to the cast that when she wasn't there, it just always felt like there was a big hole. It's a perfect soap opera kind of storyline to bring someone back from the dead. So it fits here perfectly. And it's just a fun movie. Like, it's terrible, but it's phenomenal. And it's just fun to watch. It's a perfect popcorn movie. And it's a really great example of a really diverse cast, a really interesting cast that puts butts in the seats. I mean, there's a reason that we're on movie 9 here coming out pretty soon. It's because these movies are just fun to watch, and this one is no exception.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
What do you think, John?
Well, as I've been going through and watching all of these in quick succession, I was having a little bit of trouble latching on to 6 the way I latched on to 5 or 3 or even 4. And one of the reasons for that is I have a personal little quirk where story synopsis told over credits actually infuriates me. if you can't rely on your own script to tell me what I need to know, you're cheating, and I hate it. But I worked past it because I was like, that's okay. I know I'm going to have Vin Diesel and The Rock served up to me shortly, and I'll put up with this. But it's still, you know, like, you know, I'm there with it. And then I suddenly realized on the bridge sequence why I was going to wind up loving the movie and why I did wind up loving the movie, which is basically what this is, especially with The Rock being involved, and he was Roadblock in the G.I. Joe Retaliation movie. This is essentially the Weather Dominator plot line from G.I. Joe, with a Cobra organization being chased by a perfectly matched organization of good guys trying to stop them from getting the one component they need to screw up the world and hold the world hostage. And I, at that moment, like, it was when the tank burst through, I was like, it's a G.I. Joe movie, only told with such glee that I can't not love this. And so it's not equal to some of its predecessors, but it's pretty fun. It's pretty darn fun.
In this scenario, I think I would be the geek who would have to be educated on G.I. Joe because my mom wouldn't let me watch G.I. Joe when I was a little kid.
What? Yeah, same here. I was a little bit too young for the G.I. Joe craze.
Oh, well, all right. Yeah. Well, we're going to have to fix this. Let's shelve that. We'll table that thought, and we'll come back to that later. But
okay,
yes.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. Awesome. I have seen the movies, and I did like the second one. I thought that was pretty cool. But
oh, with Cobra Law? Yeah, that was pretty. Burgess Meredith was in that. No, you're talking about the live action ones.
Yeah, the live action.
I still default to the cartoon movies.
Right. I heard that the first cartoon movie basically has the exact same plot as the Transformers, the movie. Only they brought the guy back to life at the end because they were worried about traumatizing kids or something like that, right? I loved Transformers, the movie, so maybe, anyway. For me personally, I do like Furious 6 quite a bit, and I think that, you know, it's one of the better Fast and Furious movies. I don't think that it lived up to what came before in terms of Fast 5. Watching it again now, this is the third time that I've seen it, I was really impressed by, like, the action sequences and everything. I mean, that first car chase with, like, those wedge car things that are like flipping things over and stuff like that. That was great, you know, and the end sequence, you know, on the runway, I thought was pretty great. You know, the whole movie worked really well. And I was really impressed by, like, the hand to hand combat, you know, like, you know, they brought in, they always, you know, add something to these movies as part of that escalation that we're talking about. And here, I think it really is escalated. You know, I mean, here we've got, you know, a plane chase, you know, which is pretty great. You know, I mean, in the next movie, spoilers, John, but not really spoilers, but we literally have flying cars, you know, and it's one of those things where I've always, you know, said, like, Furious 8 or Fast 8, I think at this point they need to call it Fast 8 in order to maintain the proper naming convention. They better go to space. I mean, it's really the next logical step. They have to go to space.
So it'll be like a spiritual reboot of Moonraker.
No, let's not insult them or anything.
Oh, okay.
That.
No, you know what? That's a fair point. I mean, in terms of the concept of Moonraker wasn't at fault. It was the execution.
Yes.
It'll be the Rainbow Road from Mario Kart.
There you
Ooh,
go.
Even
there
better.
You go.
I like that.
Oh, man.
I
that's
like
all
that.
We need in a furious space. Space and furious.
They
got a race to the moon, and yeah, I like this. I like where we're going.
I would watch that movie. Yeah. But they're always, like, adding people to it, you know, too. They're always, and it's usually people who are and somehow related to this world or this genre. You know, like in Fast Five, they added The Rock. You know, that was pretty huge. And
that was brilliant.
It makes perfect sense. And, you know, well, John, having seen the credit cookie, you know who's added to Furious 7. I think we can say it without... It's Jason Statham, which makes perfect sense because he's the transporter, you know? And they just announced in Fast 8, Charlize Theron is joining the cast.
Yeah, which, I saw that.
After Mad Max Fury Road, it's like, yes, yes, mm-hmm. that makes total sense. And here with this one, there weren't any like huge people, but one person who I thought really brought a lot to the movie was Gina Carano, who plays the agent who's working with The Rock, who, you know, is trying to take them down as well, and there's some twists and turns or whatever. But I think we talked about this on the show before, but, you know, she's a mixed martial artist who has broken into movies through Steven Soderbergh's Haywire, which is an amazing... movie, a spy movie. It's basically his version of a James Bond movie or whatever, but, you know, Soderbergh being Soderbergh was like, well, if someone's going to be doing all of these stunts, I want someone who actually knows how to do them. And the fact that she does do all of her own stunts and everything really adds, like, an authenticity to this stuff, to the action, which is weird saying that in this movie because, I mean, this is a movie where literally, like, a dude jumps off of a tank onto a car, you know? And, I mean, it's amazing, but...
And shortly after, another person jumps off of a moving car to grab somebody in air who's over the span between two bridges that are, you know, thousands of feet in the air, and grabs her and flies across and hits a car.
Yep, lands and on the another only, car.
Yes, but it does set up the great, how did you know the car would be there?
There's a very similar moment in the trailer for Star Trek Beyond where
someone
is falling and then, you know, Kirk, you know, reaches out and grabs Sophia Boutella's character and then they transport and crash on the transporter pad, you know? Mm-hmm. And, the day that the trailer was released, Justin Lin held like sort of an impromptu press conference where, it was just kind of like an informal sit down thing. And someone said to him, like, that, you know, that's really similar to the thing in Furious 6. And he's like, I've got, you know, I can't not be me, you know, which I thought was pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I love Gina Carano in this movie, and I love how it continued a natural trend, I think, from taking The Rock, who had gotten a start in the WWE. I think moving over to a Strikeforce fighter makes total sense. And then in Furious 7, you know, they added Ronda Rousey to the cast, too, and I thought she was so much fun in Furious 7. So they're, like, continuing this trend of breaking in these fighters in these movies, and they totally fit and they bring a totally new style of action to the movies, and I think it works really, really well.
I agree, and I think that also on a subconscious level, even though we're all going in and we know that the laws of physics don't apply in these movies, the thing is, it when they give you something like that, where even if you shelve it, even if you sit there and, you know, that's not Carano, that's not Rousey, that's their character, you still have that playing in your brain that when you watch their fight scenes, it's already subconsciously sold you that you're watching something realistic because you know that these people have really done it. So it's even better than bringing in The Rock or Kim Cold, where it's like, you know, even though they're delivering this punishment to each other, you know the artifice behind pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Whereas a real pro fighter really does help sell that idea that, well, at least the fights are real, and it buys a little more suspension of disbelief from the audience, I think.
Yeah, and that scene where she's like trying to get information about the guy, and she totally does she's like going to choke him out in that, and multiple times she's doing straight up MMA moves trying to choke people out, and it was just, she's just really good. I love to watch her fight. Like, I could watch her fight for a while. Like, she's just a really good fighter, and getting to see her do kind of a fictional version of that was just so much fun. Same with Rousey. When you get to Furious 7, So much fun to watch her fight in that movie.
Have you seen Haywire, Megan?
I have not seen Haywire.
Oh, check it out. It's so okay. Good. It's amazing. I wanted to watch it again today after watching Furious 6, but I'll watch it tomorrow.
I'll watch it for sure.
It's so great. You know, there's something about like the hand-to-hand combat being, you know, real. I mean, that fight between Michelle Rodriguez and Gina Carano, it's amazing.
We get two of them between them too.
Yeah, yeah. The one in the subway though, in particular,
that's the best one. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that one's great. And, oh, it's so great.
And I think, you know, like having that and having it be so, you know, quote unquote realistic, you know, that's something that you're going to want for hand to hand combat stuff, which maybe is not as important with car stuff because people don't know how cars fly across things at, you know, high speeds. And it's a different type of energy and stuff like that. And I think that both of them are done extremely well. I mean, I think that Lin definitely upped his game with this movie in terms of the action sequences, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty impressive. The thing which I would say, if I were to fault the movie in comparison to, you know, Fast Five, I'd say that I didn't have that same emotional connection to the characters. And I think that part of it is, you know, the idea of Fast Five and bringing everyone together and sort of making it this reunion thing was really, really strong. And with this one, I just felt like they were going through the motions on some of that stuff again. I mean, it was, you know, bigger, it was faster, more intense, but I feel like it wasn't as emotionally resonant as the previous installment.
Yeah, but I definitely think that's fair. Yeah.
But, you know, I still do think that it's really good. And watching it now, you know, sort of in the context of all of them, I think it's definitely up there. I'd say it's probably my third favorite through the first six.
As we've been talking, I kind of realized I think I had taken a big break from these movies because I was actually in a really serious car accident in 2003. And so watching race movies like this was actually really difficult for me, even though they're totally over the top. I think I saw this one well after it came out of the theater. I think I watched it for the first time right before Furious 7 came out, and I just went through and watched all of the movies, but I started with Furious 6. And I think this one is one of my favorites. I think it's my second favorite after the original movie because it's the one that got me back into the franchise.
That's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you hadn't seen, you went from like one to six, you hadn't seen the others in between, or?
I had seen the second one, okay. And I had tried to watch Tokyo Drift and turned it off.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, you wound me.
I'm sorry.
You wound me. Oh, that hurts.
I had turned it off. And then I just didn't watch any for a long time. So yeah, I think I sat down and watched Furious 6. And then was like, you know what, I need to give these movies another chance. And then I went through all of them and kind of started the beginning and went back through. And that was right before Furious 7 came out last year, I think.
So you think that the first movie is the best of the...
It's my favorite.
Yeah.
It's my favorite for sure.
And any particular reason or...
I just really like the introduction of the characters, and I really like getting to know Vin Diesel and Paul Walker's characters from the beginning and seeing how their relationship forms, and it's really just sets the stage for everything that happens after. Because if you don't, I mean, I think you can watch and enjoy the movies, but without knowing Brian and Dom's backstory, I think you kind of miss out on a lot.
So it would sort of, and the thing is, some people would take this as diminishing, but I actually, this would be sort of a complimentary thing for me. It's sort of like the world building that occurs in the prequels. Like even if they're not your favorite movies, the world building that goes on in the Fast and the Furious is necessary to even appreciate what's happening.
Yeah.
In Fast and Furious, or Fast Five, or Furious Six.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think that's a fair thing, and you know, honestly, maybe that's what maybe by this point in the series, enough people are coming in for the first time that's why they felt the need to do that recap over the credits. Was they were like, wow, there are a ton of people who haven't even seen the first one, so we should establish how long these characters have known each other to get the audience into it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a thing. I think that you're right. There is definitely a mythology, a pretty solid mythology, you know, associated with this franchise. You know, it's not just like a bunch of, you know, one-off movies. Everything sort of builds on what has come before. And, like, I totally disagree with you about that montage, John. I love that.
Feel free.
I love it because it's not... It's not really explaining what happened before. Like, to me, it's, you know, just sort of like a reminder, but yeah. I think it's extremely well done. And
it's a trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, I am going to rewatch this movie at some point because I love it.
Uh-huh.
I love them all in some way.
So good.
But that's why I'm admitting my bias coming in from the beginning, because the opening credit sequence of Superman 2 scarred me as a young boy. And then the opening credit sequence to Blade 2 reminded me of why I hated them so much. Like, and so I see what you guys are saying. This is right now, even weighting it with my bias against opening credit montages, like it, I see what you're saying, and I can see that in it, that it's not them relaying big pieces of dialogue at me or major, you know, plot points. It's recapping their relationships. It's like, you know, to get you feeling nostalgic for what you're about to revisit. Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, from a storytelling standpoint, that's kind of important. You know, you want to bring new people into your franchise. You got to give them something. And I think it's a classy way of doing like a previously on Battlestar Galactica without having someone standing there telling you what's going on.
That's a good point.
So I don't mind it at all. It's just, you know, it's the credits. It's here and it's gone. And I can enjoy it for a couple minutes and, oh yeah, I remember that part. That part was awesome. And let's watch the movie now.
Okay.
And I think
that's fair.
I think it is really well done. I mean, there's some beats and everything which it hits where I'm like, I didn't even care about this when I was watching the movie. But like, for one thing, I think that the music choice, you know, really works for that particular sequence. But then like the shot that always sticks out to me, which, you know, it's cut perfectly sort of like with the music, but there's the shot of like Dom like standing next to the car with the oil things in the background when he's looking at Letty's funeral or whatever. I remember like seeing that and thinking like, oh yeah, like they're really getting to, I mean, I think it's a really well cut together sequence.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay.
But
I will revisit and I will keep all of this in my mind and I will work past what I bring to it. And you guys are, you're winning me over.
You'll have to tell us if you like it better when you rewatch it.
I will, because before the eighth one comes out, I will probably marathon all seven.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do the same thing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, ooh, I think the Alamo Drafthouse down in Austin showed all seven in a row when the last one came out. I was so jealous.
That would be so fun.
It would be amazing. Yeah. I did. There was a theater in here in Chicago which showed 5, 6, and 7 back to back to back. I'm like, that's kind of random, but whatever. But I, of course, went and it was amazing. But
those are the ones they still had the files for, like on hand.
So. Right.
Yeah.
They should have done 5, 6 Tokyo Drift, 7. Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah. That's what they should have done. That's what they should have done. But
sorry, I don't like Tokyo Drift.
Well, you're not alone because it's the least financially successful one of the entire bunch. So
it's a weird one.
You're not standing on an island.
Yeah,
there.
It's a little off. I mean, it has its place. I could see how people would like it. It's just not my favorite one.
It really is. I think we mentioned this before, but it really does feel like sort of the Temple of Doom of, or maybe the Lost World.
Is it the Lost World
of the franchise?
Do not do that.
Because
you do not get to do that.
There's a lot
with you at Temple of Doom. Don't pull that Lost World business on me.
Like,
don't
you know,
dare.
most people, no. Like, if you go out on the street and you say, like, hey, did you like the Lost World? They'd be like, no, you're crazy. But, you know, as I found after we recorded that podcast, there's a lot of people.
They're passionate fans.
Living in the shadows, and they'll be like, hey, man. Lost World's my favorite too. I'm not gonna, if you ask me in public, I'm gonna totally deny it, but Lost World, you're right.
Just to totally go down this tangent, I rewatched Temple of Doom for the first time in like a decade recently, and you know what? That movie is solid.
It's extremely solid.
It's a great movie, and people need to watch it and give it more of a chance.
It is it is better than its reputation.
It absolutely is.
It definitely is.
Absolutely yeah. is. The it's, worst part about it is Spielberg's wife. She's the worst part about it. Everything else about it is amazing. True.
Well, gosh, we could do a whole thing on.
Oh, come on, I think she's pretty backward great in that step movie. For, I don't know. It was a poorly written character, terrible. But I think that her performance was solid. I think, you know, people are like, she's really annoying, and it's like,
but that's how she was written, you know.
Yeah, right. That's how she did a really good job at being annoying. That was her
job.
She
nailed it. That's true. That's a good point. My husband kept reminding me of that when we were watching it too, and then I go, yeah, you're right, you're right. And then she'd be annoying. Ah. Anyway. Since I took us off down this road.
No,
you're talking
okay.
about
that's
Furious
okay.
6.
That's okay. We can talk about Temple of Doom for a while. The cinematography is amazing. You know,
good.
Douglas Slocum, you know, because it looks completely different from the other movies. And, you know, you look at it as a prequel, it is a great Indiana Jones origin story, which they ruin in, you know, Last Crusade, but whatever. You know, it is a great origin story for that character. It's where he realizes that he is not,
right.
he should not be doing this for the money. He should be
right.
doing
not
this
fortune
for
and glory, but right. to get it back to where it belongs or in a museum.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you can enjoy a movie where Indiana Jones literally saves an entire village of children, then you just have no heart. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. See, the thing is, even... Yeah, I completely agree with you, because if you don't cry when the kids get freed and like they come running back to the village,
so emotional.
No, like there's something you really need to talk with somebody, because those scenes are so emotionally moving. They really are.
It's a good movie.
And you want to talk about opening credit sequences? one of my favorite of all time, I have to say. Yeah. You know. But enough on Temple of Doom.
No.
Go watch it, guys.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I get the impression that Tokyo Drift is kind of like that. Like there are a lot of, you know, just like, you know, there are a lot of hardcore Indiana Jones fans who are like, yeah. But Temple of Doom is where it's at, you know, even though no one else likes it. Mm-hmm. I think that's how Tokyo Drift is, you know, it's one of the Fast and Furious deep cuts, but it's a favorite amongst many.
I need to give it another chance. I'll give it another chance.
I didn't like it the first time I saw it either, and in subsequent viewings, I've come to appreciate it quite a bit. So I would recommend that. Yeah.
Okay. On the list.
So, I guess just two other things here. What did you guys think about the return of Letty?
I love it.
I was glad to have her back.
I love it.
I would have liked a little more memory by the end of the movie, because it was awkward. Like, I know what they were going for, but at the end, when he's like, "Do you remember any of this?" And she's like, "No, but it feels like family." I'm like, that's kind of weird. Like, you don't remember anybody, you know, and you're like sitting on his lap. At least put her in a separate chair so that she can be like, let me warm up to that. Okay, let's not jump the gun here. But, I was glad, you know, I think you said it earlier, Megan, like having Letty back is great. Because
it just feels right.
Needs to be back. Yeah. Yeah. The family does feel complete at the end, with the exception of Han being gone, which is always going to stick in my craw. But
yeah.
And
Han back.
I
don't agree with that. I don't agree with getting rid of him. But yeah, you know, I actually disagree with you though about. I like the fact that she doesn't have all of her memory back, because I mean, she feels really comfortable around Dom. Like, there's certainly some feelings being stirred up again. That's why she's okay with sitting on his lap and everything at the end. But I like that she didn't just magically get all her memories back right as soon as she decided to go back with them, because that's just too convenient. I mean, we're already talking about a really cliched storyline that's done in every Korean drama, every soap opera. Like, it's just done everywhere. I like that they are dragging it out a little bit. And it gives us something to look forward to in the next movie. Like, is she going to stay with them? Could she go decide to leave them again? It gives her something to do in the next movie, too.
Oh, that's fair. Okay. I can see that point. Sure.
Like, I mean, I like that she's back. I like the fact that she doesn't have her memories, you know, like at the end, like you're saying, Megan. But
yeah.
I also, you know, agree with you, John, in that it's weird. I think the way that they handled it was weird, because it really is kind of like, I have no idea who you people are, but you know what? It's all good. You know, let's just do this. And I think maybe she just feels a little too comfortable with it, you know? I would like there to be some doubt on her part, you know, some sort of like...
I'll give you that, yeah. It's a little too comfortable, but...
Although I will say that it gives me something in common with the character, because if you offer me free barbecue and beer, I'll sit on anybody's lap.
I'll sit on your lap if you give me free beer. Yeah, like it's pass me good. That Corona. I'm down. Let's do this.
This feels like family to me.
That's fair enough, I guess. And it is kind of weird, especially if we go back to sort of Fast Five, and presumably they knew what the credit cookie was going to be like while they were making Fast Five, but they, like, very intentionally, it seems, introduced a love interest for Dom, mm-hmm. in order to sort of just be like, and it's not even like they were trying to create a love triangle. It was just sort of like, she's like, I totally understand, because we're both together because we lost our significant others, and you know what, we'll see you later, you know. And then, you know, she shows up later on and she's like, you know, they're like, sorry, this is so awkward. And she's like, yeah, whatever. It's all good. You know,
it was so awkward. The conversation yeah. between her and Letty at the end. It's like, thanks for keeping him warm at night while I was missing. I'm totally down with that. Like,
even though I don't know who he is or who right? you are. Yeah. Right.
That was a really awkward conversation.
And, you know, and she's like, well, you know, I mean, it just seems strange that it's like, okay, so I understand why he would want to be back with her, because he was in love with her for like a decade, but at the same time, she has no idea who he is, so why isn't she like, you know, this is, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm totally okay stealing this woman's yeah. boyfriend.
Sure.
She has no problems with that. She's like, oh, he's mine again now. Even though I don't remember any of this, he's just mine and you're gone. See you later.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's very, yes. it's very strange.
Yeah, it is. I agree.
Although maybe they both just recognized that they were just, you know, for each other, ports in a storm, like rebound relationship.
That could be.
And so it's, you know, like, you know, it and just, she, you know, there's always that implied, like, maybe if her husband came back. I mean, because she says that when she's like, if it yeah. was my husband, I'd go. And so it's like, you know, I agree that introducing her, having her character get so intimately involved with Dom by the end of Five. Yeah. Like, you know, like she should have said goodbye then,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
And that way, instead of having to make it so that you bookend the movie with her. Where it's like her character was introduced just to get rid of her, sort of thing. I don't know.
Because I guess if you time it out with Jordana Brewster's pregnancy or whatever, like they were probably only together for like 6 or 7 months, right? It's not like years had gone by in between the two movies or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, at most 8 months.
So most. So they probably weren't super duper serious. So, but that maybe should have been conveyed a little more. As well, I don't know.
I think if you've brought the cop that was trying to take you in to live with you in your illicit villa that you bought with your millions of dollars that you ripped off of a drug lord in Rio, there's an implied level of intimacy that you can't walk back on.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, since we brought it up and kind of forgot to mention it or whatever, should we talk about Han and Giselle? And
yes,
and there, yeah, I know it's sad. Was...
I don't like any of the stuff that happened.
It's so maddening, so maddening, because not only do I know Han's dead, but they break his heart before it happens.
Right?
And I'm like, come yeah. on, like, geez, dude, like, have her go off with him and have me always wonder what happened to her or something. You know, like maybe it didn't work out or something like that. But come on, man.
I mean, I was really sad about it, and it's one of those things where, you know, every time I see it, I'm like, no, no, because, you know, like we talked about last week, you know, if they're doing spinoff movies, which they say they are, you know, Han and Giselle, you know, and their further mm-hmm. adventures are right
that
at the top of
the list. That would have been an awesome franchise.
It still yep. can be, you know, why not, right? But, you know, from a story standpoint, okay, we know that Han dies. We know that he's going to Tokyo. And if we sort of like reverse engineer this thing and bring in Better Luck Tomorrow and say that that is truly part of this, I mean, it's very clear that, you know, in Tokyo Drift, they say, like, why are you here, Han? And he's like, this is my Mexico. You know, you always mm-hmm. see the people, you know, running away from the bad guys, and they always go to Mexico for safe haven, and this is my Mexico. And you can say, like, oh, well, you know, they, you know, in Better Luck Tomorrow, they, you know, did some very bad things, and that's what he's mm-hmm. talking about. Then we introduce Han in Fast and Furious, Fast 5, and Furious 6, and we realize that there's a whole lot of other stuff going on, you know, prior to Tokyo Drift, but after Better Luck Tomorrow, and it essentially gets Han to a different place in terms of where the character is, and you essentially need to do something to cut him back down to where he was at the end of Better Luck Tomorrow. And I think by killing Giselle, you do that, you know? And he's like, I'm going to Tokyo. It's just something that I have to do because we've already seen
that. Right.
And, you know, I mean, I think that that's okay. And the fact that, you know, spoilers, you see the credit cookie where it takes you back to that scene where he dies, I think that, like, it almost works better in this context than it does in the context of Tokyo Drift, because it's like you just see him drift racing through Tokyo, right? And it's like he's become like a completely self-destructive person now, right? Like, he lost the mm-hmm. love of his life, and now he's just drift racing through Tokyo, and he's going to get into a car accident and die because he's essentially like lost the will to live or whatever. I mean, that's not how it plays out in terms of the whole continuity, but that's how it emotionally plays out in terms of this movie. And I think that there's something to that, which works pretty well. So, I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, you got to do it at some point. You got to kill him at some point because you already did. And I think that this is a fine way to do it. You know,
I was so incredibly hopeful watching it for the first time. I was like, oh, wait, are they going to show him like crawl away or something?
Yeah.
He's like going to lose his memory too. They could bring him back. Oh, no.
Hey,
no,
if they can bring Letty back.
It's true.
Yeah, bring
it's
him true. Back.
They pretty much sealed this one up, though. There's no coming back for this. But
yeah,
I guess
don't like it.
If they've killed his true love, then I suppose that's the only, like, bringing him back just brings back a character who is, you
broken
know,
broken in a sense. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, it would take away the what makes Han great. You know, I mean, he was an awesome character. You add Giselle to the mix, and then it becomes a super awesome, you know, team in a sense. You know, I mean, those are my two favorite characters in the entire franchise by far, you know. And the two of them together, I think, is, you know, fantastic. And, God, they better make that movie. Because, I mean, really, if you're going to be doing spinoff movies, who wouldn't want to watch that movie, right?
I would totally watch that movie.
I want Justin Lin to come back to direct the movie of Han and Giselle. I will buy the ticket right now.
Yeah.
I will pay the premium to go see that at the premiere, whatever I have to do.
Yep. So, okay, and in terms of the credit cookie, you know, I guess just last thing. What did you guys think about this credit cookie? Megan?
Despite the fact that they kill off my second favorite character behind, well, Dom and The Rock are kind of both my favorite character. But beside the fact that they kill off one of my favorite characters, I think it's a great credit cookie. It got me really excited for the next movie. And Jason Statham, like, who doesn't like seeing Jason Statham just show up out of nowhere? That was awesome. I loved it.
What'd you think, John?
Han is gone. I'm still coming to terms with it. But I will say that at the very least, showing Statham involved, like having that be his introduction, I'm going into Furious 7. I want to see The Rock beat him up. I want to see Tom beat him up. I want to see everybody take a turn. I want to see him get trapped in a warehouse where everybody on the team shows up and beats him up because how dare he do that? Yeah. So in that sense, it's terrific because it's making me come into Furious 7. Like, I am ready to watch this go down now because I want justice because he did that. That evil, awful person.
You know, going back to what we were talking about, I don't think it was necessary to kill both Han and Giselle, but I think killing Han and using that as the introduction for Jason Statham was brilliant because I think so many people really loved him. And so to lose such a cherished character, like you're talking about, you get so angry at Statham that you just, you can't wait to see that revenge in the next movie. Yeah. So in terms of, I mean, that's a really great emotional setup for your audience. Doesn't mean I liked it, but it's a perfect emotional setup. And then you go into Furious 7, furious.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's an amazing, you know, credit cookie on its own terms. And I think the introduction of Jason Statham is just perfect because you've seen the craziest movie you've ever seen in your entire life where they've been building and building and building and they've gone from stealing, you know, TV VCR combos to now, you know, cars shooting through planes and, you know, massive, you know, planes being destroyed on runways. And
I love that whole scene.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's
so
just amazing.
It's like, how do you top that? How do you do a credit cookie which tops that? It's like, well, you bring in Jason Statham, you know?
That's right.
That's the only thing you can do. And I think that that's kind of amazing because you're just like, what? Oh my God. If they did all this in this one, what are they going to do in Furious 7? And I think that that's pretty great. You know, that being said, I think the sort of retconning of that scene from Tokyo Drift is a little weird because it's very clear what happens. And then to say like, oh no, you know, this guy was there, you know, specifically to take him out. Like that just seems like,
Yeah, that is really weird.
They're pushing it a bit too much. But then again, I guess like you're saying, Megan, you know, with it being sort of like a soap opera or whatever, I mean,
it is a soap opera. You can't deny that it's a soap opera.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. And,
right.
And the fact that they just brought back, you know, Letty in the most, you know, soap opera-ish way imaginable, it's fine. You know, it's in keeping with that. And that's pretty great. So okay, I'm okay with it then. And yeah, I don't know. There's another problem that I have with it, but I guess this is more Furious 7 related, so we'll save it since, you know, John, I know you haven't seen it, but I have a problem.
You're going to like it, though.
Yeah, you are going to like it.
I'm so happy about that.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Although I do want to know why Brian Tyler didn't do the music to this. Was it just a scheduling conflict? I mean, like, I don't know. I couldn't see anything as to why. What, it couldn't have been a cost thing, you know? Like, because they still use some of his music.
It was probably a scheduling thing. Who did the music for this one?
It was Lucas Vidal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Tyler comes back for the next one, right? If I'm not mistaken. Sorry.
Yeah, he did the music for 7.
Okay. Yeah. The thing about Furious 7, which I just want to say this right now because we're not going to be covering it. Okay. Let's just take a step back. One thing, you know, as we've been talking about throughout all of this series, like, you know, Justin Lin seems to be very loyal in terms of his crew. And, you know, a lot of people who worked on this movie and the other movies are working on Star Trek Beyond, basically the entire crew. You've got, you know, Stephen F. Winden, the cinematographer, the editor. Kelly Matsumoto came back for this one. And then also Dylan Highsmith was brought on to edit this movie. And he's also going on, along with Kelly Matsumoto and some other people, to edit Star Trek Beyond. But one thing that we did talk about last week is the fact that almost the entire crew from, you know, the Justin Lin movies stayed for Furious 7, even though Justin Lin left, you know, which I think is really interesting. And I don't know the reasoning behind that or whatever. Part of me thinks that James Wan, the director, had never made a movie like this before, unless you count, like, Death Sentence. But, you know, he's known for Saw and Insidious and The Conjuring and stuff like that. So this is kind of, like, outside of his, you know, his comfort zone in a sense. And maybe he was like, well, these guys did really good on that one. I want to make sure that I have someone who can, you know, I can count on. I don't know what it is, or if it was to maintain like some consistency, or if it was a producer thing or whatever. But regardless of any of that, you know, since this show is about the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek, and since this is a Justin Lin series, we're not covering Furious 7. Watch Furious 7 anyway, because in addition to it being an awesome movie, basically everyone who worked on that movie is going on to work on Star Trek Beyond. So definitely check it out. All right. Any final thoughts on Furious 6, Megan?
One of the things I love about this series is that they added The Rock. And when they did that, I was like, this is just the dumbest stunt I've ever seen pulled. I thought it was a terrible idea. But then I actually watched it and I was like, I'm in love with The Rock. I'm in love with The Rock now because of the Fast and Furious movies. And I have to say, he's one of the only people that can call a female woman. And I'm like, oh, please say that again. Because the way that he does it, I don't know, something about the way that he calls females woman. I'm like, you call her that.
Yeah.
That works.
That was one of those moments where, I mean, there's like some stuff where he does where I'm just like, okay, all right. Like,
I just love him.
His sort of cavalier use of guns, which sort of goes through his entire career. Like, there's, I think it's a trilogy now, a trilogy of movies in which The Rock plays characters who have sworn off the use of guns, but then at some point in the third act comes to the realization that guns really do solve all problems and picks up a gun and shoots
a
bunch of people.
Not all, just a specific subset of them.
I'm just saying, it's weird and terrifying. But regardless of any of that, you know, that's kind of like how I feel about The Rock in general, but I do love him still.
I just love him so much. He has so many great scenes, like the scene where he's like gripping the hand of that guy for the security company is brilliant. And then in the fight, in the final scene on the runway, you know, we've got three simultaneous hand-to-hand combat pieces going on inside this airplane, and his is by far the most entertaining because he's fighting giant Russian dude. Who knew they could find someone bigger than The Rock for him to fight, but they did. And he's and he's like a total badass. And he does, like, I've never seen anyone else do this before or since. He does a flying headbutt. And he looks like a salmon flying out of the ocean. Hits this guy with his head. Just, I could honestly watch like a whole spinoff of The Rock. I mean, talk about spinoffs from the Furious movies. I'd watch a Rock spinoff too.
Oh,
I'm sure.
Sold.
I'm sure that's right at the top of their list. I know they were talking about that before they were talking about, you know, spinoffs in general. You know, so I would be shocked if we don't see that movie.
I totally agree.
Yeah,
I still think he should have been Aquaman.
He would have made a good Aquaman.
I know, wouldn't he?
He's got the eyebrow raise alone as Aquaman. Like, come on.
No, but like, you're swimming all the time. Look at those arms. Yeah. Like, you need a lot of upper body strength.
He could totally hold a trident. He'd look awesome holding a trident.
And I will believe that if he throws a trident, it's going to go through anything he throws it at.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I agree.
Man. There you go.
Well, but he is going to be in he's going to play, what's his name? Black Adam?
Which I'm already in line for.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
that's actually a good casting decision. That's actually really good casting.
Yeah. And I think the other thing which kind of plays into that, which is good, is it sounds like that movie is going to be more family oriented.
Yes.
He's really good.
He plays well
at
to all audiences
stuff.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I watched The Tooth Fairy, and I'm not going to say it's a good movie, but it's not a terrible movie, and he's so charismatic, you know, that he totally pulls it off. I think that he's a good choice for like kids movies and stuff. So
He's got charisma, and he has just phenomenal chemistry with everyone he's on camera with. I've never seen another actor have that much chemistry with literally everybody.
Oh, and by the way, we totally forgot to mention this last week, but of course he is another Star Trek alum because he appeared on Voyager.
Oh,
is
that's
that true?
Right. Yeah, does.
Yeah,
is that because I heard at one point that was an urban legend.
No,
did he really?
That's really a thing.
Yeah, where he fought. There was the whole thing where they were doing the WWE tie-in, and he fought Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
You don't remember this episode where he had the weird thing glued on his forehead?
Grab Shire, go sit down and watch this episode.
Okay. Voyager was on the downslope of my Star Trek viewing. There were a lot of things going on in my life, I wasn't watching that series very closely.
It's not a great episode, but it's worth watching just to see The Rock on
Star
Trek. If
The Rock is in it, I'm going to go, yeah. I mean, if The Rock is in it, then I'm sold. Yeah. I'm showing up. No problem.
Oh, here it is. Season 6, episode 15.
Yeah, it was towards the end of the series.
Yeah, it's one of those that I can't pronounce. Tsongkhati? 7 of 9 and Tuvok are kidnapped while on an away mission, and Seven is forced to fight in their gladiator-like competition, or Tuvok will not receive the medical attention that he requires.
That's right.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
So, of course, okay. All right. Makes sense.
Yeah, it's worth watching for sure.
Well, I got something to watch before I go to bed tonight. Awesome. Awesome.
All right. So, John, any final thoughts on...
Yeah, you know what? I think what I really need to say is that it is strictly because of Commentary Trek Stars that I ever even watched the Fast and Furious movies. And it has been one of the most shocking... Like, I have a friend who today, the day that we're recording this, I went out to lunch with him, and he kept saying to me, he goes, "This is a bit. You're playing a bit. You don't actually love these movies, right? You're just putting everybody on." I'm like, nope. Totally sold. I never would have gone near these movies if we weren't examining them. And it has been a pure joy. Like, I love these movies, and I am a fan, and I can't... I mean, what a strong note to end on. Like, Star Trek is in good hands, so far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I never got the impression that this was a bit on your part, you know?
Not at all.
I was shocked that you liked them, but I'm glad. Did you? I'm sorry, Megan. Did you have any final thoughts aside from that? I know you were.
It's just a great film franchise, and you know, on paper it looks cheesy and terrible. And honestly, some of the previews make it look cheesy and terrible. But man, there's just... I think it's the amount of joy that they bring to these movies. You can just tell that everyone is having fun making them, from the actors to the crew to the stunt people to the choreographers. I mean, they're just fun. Grab yourself a bucket of popcorn and sit down and just watch these movies, because chances are you're going to like them. And there's a reason that we're like on our way to 10 movies in this franchise. Who would have thought that this little movie from 2001 would turn into one of the biggest global franchises? But it did that for a reason.
Yep. Indeed.
That's true. Just before we wrap this up, I just need to tell this story, because I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Bear with me, guys.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah. It ties into like this whole show to me anyway. So okay, this is going to sound crazy, that's life. So in 2013, my family, we took a family trip to Paris. It was one of those things where like my grandfather had died and he wanted to take everyone, and then he died, so we used his inheritance to go to Paris. And you know, none of us, well, I had never been to Europe, and you know, who knows the next time that I'm going to go to Europe. And it's one of those things where Paris, maybe not first on my list of places to go, but whatever, you know. Of course, you know, I'm going to go. And the one thing which kind of bummed me out about this was the fact that it was in May of 2013, which is when Star Trek Into Darkness was coming out, a new Star Trek movie, and I was going to miss it. I was going to miss the premiere here in the U.S. And France doesn't care about Star Trek, apparently, because it wasn't coming out until, like, July over there. And I'm like, well, this kind of, you know, it's disappointing. You know, I see everyone online buying their advance tickets, and I'm like, yeah, I'll catch it on the flip side, I guess. And like a few months before the release, a few months before we go, they announced that they moved up the release date in the UK, and it was coming out a week earlier than it was in even the US. So at that point, I'm like, oh, like I'm literally going to be like a train ride away from how can I not go to London and see Star Trek Into Darkness at the second largest IMAX screen in the world, like at the, you know, the midnight opening. Like, how, there's no way that I can't do that, right? So of course my family is like, you're literally gonna go to London to see a movie? And I'm like, well, you're talking to me. I mean, that sounds like totally something I would do, right? And they're like, whatever. And, you know, I mean, the whole thing was like, well, when am I going to get to go to London ever, you know? So I might as well, you know? And you know, my wife and my sister and I, we, you know, took the Channel thing, whatever, down there. And, you know, we go to London to see Star Trek Into Darkness. And we got there, you know, like a day early. And, you know, we're like, okay, let's go see London. Let's walk around. What do we do? And we're like, let's go to Leicester Square because that's where the happening whatevers are. And, oh, hey, I hear these Leicester Square theaters are amazing. Let's go see Iron Man 3 at this amazing movie theater. And it'll be great. So we're there and we're walking around and there's massive crowds of people like all like lined up along the sidewalk, and we hear like these cars, you know, these like engines which are being revved and stuff like that, and we're like, what's going on? And we look at it, you know, we make our way through or whatever, and we see that it's all these like sports cars, these racing cars, things that you see in Furious 6. And it turns out that it was the world premiere of Furious 6 because the movie takes place in London. They decided to do it in London. This is at like one of the premiere. I mean, I went to the theater the next day that they had this at, and it's honestly one of the best movie theaters I've ever been to in my life. And it was just like, hey, that's crazy. Look, they're premiering, you know, Furious 6 here, and, you know, whatever. Went on our way, went to see Star Trek Into Darkness, and it was an amazing experience and all this stuff. And now here we are, like at that time, never in a million years would I think that Justin Lin would be the guy in charge of the franchise when we ended the show, and that Furious 6, that movie that was premiering, you know, right next to where we saw Into Darkness in like another continent, you know, like that would be the last movie that we'd be doing on this show. That's just weird and bizarre and random. And, you know, there's something poetic about it. I don't know.
It is. That is really cool. Yeah. That's really cool.
The universe actually is a weird place.
Yeah,
I guess it is. So anyway,
I like that.
That's so cool.
So Megan, where can people find you on the internet? You know, Educating Geeks, where's that at?
Yeah, so if you want to find Educating Geeks online, we're at Educating Geeks, all one word. No weird spellings, just Educating Geeks. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you want to find, oh, and we're also at educatinggeeks.com. We try and make it easy for you guys. And then if you want to find me personally, I'm at Meg Calcote, C-A-L-C-O-T-E, pretty much everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Instagrams, Tumblr. I haven't actually used Tumblr in a while, but I'm there. So yeah, you can find me or Educating Geeks, and we'd love to have you guys.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, well, cool. Thank you very much for joining us. It was great. Yeah. And a movie that we all agree on.
Yeah.
The Lost World. So
it's been a pleasure. It was a great conversation.
Yeah. We would welcome you back to the show anytime, but there won't be a show after two more weeks. So sorry.
Well, if it ever comes back from the dead like Letty, I'll be there.
Excellent.
What's our credit cookie going to be?
Yes. So that was a lot of fun talking to Megan about Furious 6.
Yes, it was. It was a great time.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I was thinking about this and I was looking back, you know, since this is the last movie that we're doing or whatever. And, you know, I looked back and this is number 116 in terms of just like non-Star Trek things that we've talked about that Star Trek creators have done. And, you know, I went back and I looked at the very first thing that Max and I did, and it was Gene Roddenberry's first TV show, The Lieutenant, starring Gary Lockwood.
Wow.
And the episode in particular that we watched was an episode which guest stars Leonard Nimoy, and basically the premise of the episode is like Leonard Nimoy is a hotshot Hollywood filmmaker who's basically they Hollywood comes calling to this it takes place on a Marine base, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right? And you know, Hollywood, and this is like pre-Vietnam. In fact, Vietnam is pretty much what caused the cancellation of that show. And you know, Nimoy is like, oh, we want to make a movie about this battle that you were in, you know, so we need you to consult on it. And you know, the Marines are like, oh, great. You know, this is great that you're telling our story. And then Leonard Nimoy is like, yeah, so my idea is, you know, we're going to have big explosions and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And the Marines are like, that's not what happened at all. And Nimoy's like, who cares? You know, he's basically like Michael Bay, you know, and he's like, I don't care about the reality. Let's just see things blow up. And, you know, it's a great show, you know, black and white, you know, pre-Star Trek, and just, you know, these little character dramas. And it's like, that's what we started with, like basically a show about like a guy played by Leonard Nimoy who's trying to make a big explosive action movie. And, you know, they're saying like, no, don't do that because it's, you know, disrespectful to what actually happened. And now we're ending it with like the biggest blockbuster action movie that we possibly could, you know, going from The Lieutenant to Furious Six. There's just something about that, which
there's a beautiful symmetry at play here. And I think that everybody would get a kick of going back and listening back to all of the episodes.
Yeah, just start now and just marathon them all the way through. It will only take you like about a week and a half if you don't stop listening, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, and they've said that listening in your sleep, you actually learn things. So you could listen to certain key episodes in your sleep. You know, maybe the recap episodes, you could save those for when you're actually asleep and sort of like absorb that information. And, you know, it'd be great. You could walk around work and you just suddenly blurt out facts about different Star Trek creators. And people would be like, what are you talking about? And you'd be like, oh, sorry, just had my tapes on last night.
I think people should try that. I think they should try that and then let us know.
I think they should. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, it's been fun talking about Furious 6 this week, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
I want to hear Worf give a command sometime, like, 1/4 ramming speed! And then yes. Someone says, Captain, regulation specifically states that we cannot go at 1/4 ramming speed while we are in orbit of a planet.
To the journey! Yeah, where Seven actually mentions that, where she's like, hey, we tried this before. You know, like, I offered my services, and you said no.
You're making her sound like an escort.
I know, I didn't really mean that to happen. It just kind of came out that way.
She's working the alcove.
The ready room.
You know, because he's appealing to the Ferengi side of Nog, which is still so much a part of who he is.
I'm glad he didn't offer him Umox, though.
Yeah, well, whoa. When you said he was going to shack up with Vic earlier, I was like, whoa, it didn't go that far.
The 602 Club. I feel like Men of Steel was a great groundwork to work from, and Batman v Superman, it had to build off of that, because if they didn't build off of Man of Steel, people would say, oh, they're trying to ignore perceived failure in the past. And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. If you want to help us out, you can go to our store, the Trek FM Promenade, which is a Redbubble store, which has original designs specifically made for Trek FM by Aaron Harvey. And it's some pretty cool designs.
Including one I've got my eye on myself right now, which is the Trek FM 104.7 Trekking Through the 80s, which is... You know, if you remember the design aesthetic of the 80s, it's pretty fantastic. I think people will get a kick out of that. Go check that out.
Yeah, for sure. You could get it as like a bumper sticker or something, right? I mean, it'd be perfect. Yeah. Another way that you can help us out by keeping all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the other great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more, including seats on our patrons roundtable, where you can get in on the podcasting action yourself. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can fill out the form on trek.fm/contact, or you can leave us a voicemail on speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can find the network on Twitter at trekfm, or you can find the network on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference, which is our listener forum. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at trek.fm and click on the discussion tab on the menu bar. So, John, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, by this point, I think everybody knows they can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. Come on by. Love to talk with you. I do, of course, crawl through the aforementioned Babel Conference. And you can find me on two other podcasts. One, Words with Nerds, that I co-host with my buddy Craig. And you can also find me on Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast that I co-host with Trek FM's own Matthew Rushing.
And you can find me right here on Trek FM producing From There to Here, which is our daily rewatch of the entire franchise from beginning to end, looking at two episodes a day. We are currently, I think, just out of the movie era and moving into next gen. We're right around that. So if you want to see what's going on in the first season of next gen, you know, now's a good chance to jump in, you know, 24th century. Woohoo.
Yeah.
And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. All right. So, yeah, that's it. This is our last movie that we're doing, but we've still got a couple more episodes left. We've got a couple things that we need to wrap up and, you know, put a bow on it and all that stuff. And next week, we will be back to recap our series on Justin Lin, looking at all of his movies together and maybe trying to figure out what that means for Star Trek Beyond.